Wednesday, March 8, 2017. I'm opening a meeting of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on Human Services. And today we'll be hearing public testimony on the Oregon Health Authority, the Oregon State Hospital, the Public Employee Benefit Board, the Oregon Educators Benefit Board, and public health. Ms. Ames, anything else you want to say to tee us up for this?
Madam Chair, I just want to tell people the clock's going to run for 2 minutes, and when it turns yellow, then you have 30 seconds left. So don't panic. And it won't buzz, but then at 2 minutes, it'll turn red.
No buzz. And I'm going to, one other logistical thing, and then I'm taking Chair's prerogative to say one other thing. The other logistical thing is, unless I have a lot more people signed up there than I had a few minutes ago, I'll probably be going by topic area since we've got it pretty well organized that way. So when you start to hear people talking about the same thing you're talking about, it's okay to say ditto because that gives everybody else a little bit more time. If you have written testimony to submit, please be sure to give it to Eric, our amazing committee assistant here, and he'll make sure it gets scanned into the record so that it's available for all committee members to read, and we do read them. Then last but not least, I'm going to just take a moment to say I'm glad to see so many people wearing red out there. Today is International Women's Day. Some people are talking about a day without women. If we had a day without women in this state, we would have no governor. We would have no Speaker of the House. We would have no majority leaders. We would have no attorney general. And we would not have quorum on the vast majority of our committees. So in this state, women run an huge part of the government. It is very appropriate for us to be having this hearing today. Women are absolutely integral and form the bulk of the workforce in the vast majority of the areas we're going to be talking about today. Women are the caregivers, they are the public health experts, they are the people on the front lines of our school-based health centers, and I could go on for a long time. I won't, because your testimony is more important than mine. But I think it's very important to acknowledge in this hearing why we need to be celebrating the importance of women. We need to go much further to correct pay disparities, to correct a range of health disparities, to correct a whole bunch of things that so many of you in this room, men and women, are working to achieve, to create gender parity for every person living in the state and around the world. So thank you for those of you who are wearing red today. Thank you for those of you who stand in solidarity with the women in your lives. And thank you for being here today to share your testimony with the state. And with that, we're going to start with Senator Manning, Representative Fahey, and Commissioner Hall.
Yes.
I'm afraid we're going to hold you accountable to the same 2 minutes that we're holding everybody accountable for. We're giving you the privilege of coming up first, but we're going to hold you to the same time limit.
Fair enough.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Co-Chair Sarah Hayward and Rayfield and members of the committee. My name is Julie Fahey, and I'm the state representative from West Eugene and Junction City. And the Oregon State Hospital Junction City campus is located in my district, and I'm here this morning to advocate against its closure. Last month, I circulated a letter to the Joint Ways and Means Committee co-chairs urging them to keep the Junction City Hospital open in their budget for the next biennium. This letter was signed by Senator Manning and myself and seven other members of the Lane County legislative delegation who care both about the hospital's impact on the state mental health system and on its economic impact on our county. The Junction City campus plays a critical role in Oregon's mental health care system. If the campus is closed, the majority of patients would need to be transferred to the Oregon State Hospital up in Salem. The likely result would be overcrowding in Salem, leading to unsafe work environment for employees and reducing the overall quality of care that patients receive. In addition, some Oregon State hospital patients would need to be transitioned into lower-level community-based treatment programs. However, our community-based facilities do not currently have the resources necessary to accept additional patients and provide adequate treatment. And the governor's budget did not include any major funding increases for these community-based programs. While I strongly believe in the importance of community-based treatment, the reality is that there will always be some patients who need both an intensive level of care and a level of security that community-based setting cannot provide. The state of Oregon has made a long-term investment of over $100 million in building the Junction City campus and will be paying off its bonds until 2039. Closing the campus would not only cost Lane County hundreds of jobs, but it would also undermine the trust that we as legislators have worked so hard to build with our constituents, that our government will be a good steward of their resources. For my part, I'm willing to work with the House and the Senate leadership to find budgetary solutions that increase revenue and fully fund the services that Oregonians rely on. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today, and I'd like to thank everyone who came out to testify on behalf of the hospital and its importance to our community and our state's mental health care system. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Senator.
Thank you. Co-chairs Dr. Steiner Haywood and Rayfield, thank you, and members of the committee, thank you so much. My name is James Ivory Manning, Jr. I'm a senator from Senate District 7, representing Eugene and Junction City. Representative Fahey very articulately and eloquently stated the background for the reason for holding or keeping the Junction City Hospital open. I want to just add just a little bit more to what she has been saying. One is that when I have been talking with the director of the Department of Corrections, this is a great day for women, and I think that it is clearly a day that we need to recognize, and not only that, expand on opportunities. One of those opportunities that we have, I was informed that we might be trying to open up another women's prison. I am opposed to that. Instead of that, I offer alternatives, which would include the Junction City Hospital. So with the Junction City Hospital, most of the women, at least 70% of the women that are incarcerated in Coffee Creek, are there for mental or emotional disorders, nonviolent. Those women could be transferred to that facility, expand the use of that facility, and create an environment where, through rehabilitation with their families, and to help them transition back into the community. This is a great opportunity, not to mention the fact is that it's already in place and is underutilized. So I encourage you to vote aye on this bill so that we can continue moving forward with an investment that we already have, and also expand opportunities to do the right thing through rehabilitation for those women that are needing a little bit extra help in terms of mental hygiene or substance abuse. We have the facility. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Senator. Commissioner Hall.
Thank you, Co-Chair Dr. Steiner Haywood, Co-Chair Rayfield, and members of the subcommittee. I do appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today. My name is Bill Hall. I'm in my fourth term as a Lincoln County Commissioner, and I'm currently serving as President of the Association of Oregon Counties. Oregon counties are on the front line in providing mental health and public health services. As AOC president, I have made my priority expanding participation in the Stepping Up Initiative, which is a joint project of the Council of State Governments, the National Association of Counties, and the American Psychiatric Association. Building a more robust community mental health system, including treatment, supportive housing, and wraparound services, is the best means we have to reduce the number of people with mental illness in the justice system, including the aid and assist population that threatens to overwhelm the state hospital. Strategic investments now will save taxpayer dollars and produce safer communities in the long run. I know you're facing severe challenges in dealing with the deficit, but I can't let this opportunity go by without encouraging you to keep the effort to modernize Oregon public health services on your horizon and do what you can to advance them. Public health is evolving from its traditional role of safety net service provider to a more active role in health education and prevention. We're doing great things with the modest resources we have currently, and we've been working in partnership with our neighboring health departments in Benton and Linn County even before the modernization efforts began. But as long as Oregon remains near the bottom of the states in per capita support for public health, our opportunities to reduce long-term changes in behavior will be limited. Right now, state general fund dollars for public health in Lincoln support communicable disease investigations, maternal child health, nurse home visiting, tobacco use and prevention, as well as reproductive health and our four school-based health centers. I see I'm out of time, so I will turn in my written testimony, which goes a little further on those points.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Thanks for being here. And we're going to be moving next into Pevin Oweb. We're going to have Melissa Unger and Dave Bolton come up and talk about that. You're the only two who are signed up for this. And then we're going to be switching from there. We're going to go back to the State Hospital in Junction City. I'll be telling people who's on deck for the next. And when you come up, somebody just start talking. You don't have to wait for everybody to sit down. So next up for this will be Dr. Stone and George Glenn?
Gilchrist.
Did I get that right? Thank you. And Maria Caspar will be the next up after these two. Please.
Thank you, Chairs Steiner Hayward and Representative Rayfield. Thanks for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Melissa Unger, and I'm the political director for SEIU Local 503. There's been lots of questions that have come up around PEB, and I just want to take a quick second to address some of them. First off, it's important to note that PEB is a very good benefit, and that state employees over the years have prioritized that as a benefit, and that is why state employees, compared to their private sector peers, make 98% of their private sector or private sector peers in total compensation. But 88% in salary. So we understand that these benefits are good benefits, but it's part of a total compensation package that's very competitive with their private sector peers. In 2010, PEB switched from a fully insured model to a self-insured model for its largest plans, and that, by estimates, has saved $180 million through PEB. By making that switch. And also in 2011, we made a lot of changes. We implemented the health engagement model, we started employing premium shares, and we started to make some plan design changes to use evidence-based health outcomes to steer to lower cost treatments. And since that, the costs have dropped dramatically. From 2001 to 2011, the average increase in PEB was 10.5% a year. The average increase in PEB from 2011 to 2016 has been 1.9% a year. And so all of those changes that they did in 2011 have really helped to maintain and keep costs down, and even allowed the general fund to come back and regroup $120 million during the 2015-17 budget to make sure that we could fund services. So $120 million was taken out of reserves, because PEB has been able to keep costs down just last biennium. I think the other thing that's important to note is that right now you may have heard that the estimate is that PEB will be over the 3.4% cap for the 2018 plan year. The primary driver of the projected increase are provider rates. Of the 6.8% potential increase, 3.2% comes from provider rates. So we will be working to make sure we fit within that cap in the next couple of months, because we believe that that's a mandatory cap to fit into. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Steiner Hayward and Chair Rayfield and members of the committee, and thanks for your work in Ways and Means. I know it's a difficult area. For the record, my name is Dave Bolton, and I'm a 25-year employee of the Department of Consumer and Business Services and a member of SEIU 503. I'm the sub-local president at DCBS. I'm speaking here today as a SEIU representative and not in my role at the insurance division. I'd like to provide testimony in support of the PEB agency budget. PEB is a really good health plan and becoming a great health plan, in my opinion, compared to the other states, with benefits to thousands of SEIU members statewide. In fact, as in my role as sub-local president, when I give employee orientation, I frequently hear from the new workers that affordable, high-quality health plan is one of the most important things, reasons why they came to work for the state. Also, when we do our bargaining surveys, health insurance is always the number one concern, and I think it's really commendable that the state employees want to make sure that the families are taken care of. SEIU members constantly have delivered a high-quality health plan through our bargaining process, and we appreciate the focus on prevention services we've been working so hard on, which is bringing down our rate. And I think the state of Wisconsin came up with a 1.8% increase, so I think all the states are helping in this regard. This will help us keep our costs down and preserve the benefits that all of our members and the state employees rely on. And especially speaking as having two daughters, it really helped them out tremendously personally. And my youngest that has some health problems just graduated with her master's in special education from the University of Oregon. And so this has really been a blessing to us and our other state employees. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. All right, we've got coming up Dr. Stone, George Gilchrist, Maria Caspar. And we were going to go slightly out of order. We'll switch for just one moment after this panel. We'll switch to Doug Riggs, Allison Kelly, and Maureen Hinman on the next panel for public health. Please.
Co-Chair Steiner Hayward, Co-Chair Rayfield, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony on the Junction City Oregon State Hospital and the mental health budget. My name is Robert Stone. I'm a psychiatrist at Oregon State Hospital, and I'm the president of the Ask Me Local 3327, representing the state-employed physicians at OSH. To further the discussion of how we continue to provide compassionate, collaborative, and effective services for the severely mentally ill in Oregon, I would like to direct the committee's attention to four immovable factors we face in addition to the budget shortfall. First, the number of mentally ill is an ever-increasing target. As our population grows and our ability to identify mental illness improves, the number of patients we must serve will never do anything but increase. Second, the patients we treat at Oregon State Hospital will continue to get more and more difficult to treat. The number of patients we now have with traumatic brain injuries and methamphetamine-induced psychotic and bipolar disorders is already a large part of our daily practice. Unfortunately, they are also very difficult and, in some cases, impossible to treat. Third, under Olmstead, if we do not perfect our timely ability to treat and release back to the community our civil patients, the Department of Justice will intervene. And fourth, if we do not continue to be able to take all of our 370 able to aid and assist patients within 7 days of referral, the OSH superintendent faces immediate jail time for contempt. We do not have the comprehensive community mental health services to offset even one of these factors. If we did, then the counties wouldn't need to be using the 370 path as a back door to get treatment for their public mental health populations. Maybe one day I can return, when we have these services, to testify that it's safe to close the Junction City Hospital, but today, unfortunately, is not that day. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good morning, co-chairs Steiner Hayward, Rayfield, and members of the committee. Thank you all for the opportunity to provide testimony on the Oregon Health Authority budget. I am here today to testify in opposition to proposed plans to close the Junction City Hospital.
Can I just remind you to introduce yourself for the record, please?
I'm just about
okay.
to.
Okay, thank you very much.
For the record, my name is Marla Casper, and I am the elected vice president with Ask Me Local 75, representing the registered nurses at Oregon State Hospital, Junction City. I am currently a mental health registered nurse at the Oregon State Hospital, and I have worked in the mental health field as a nurse for about 17 years. I work with individuals who have a variety of mental health needs and range from people who are civilly committed to individuals who are placed under the care of the state. Budget cuts to the Oregon State Hospital in Junction City would be a blow to mental health services in the southern counties of Oregon, where a large number of our clients and their families reside. By closing Junction City Oregon State Hospital, we would be decreasing the community resources available to individuals that are in their own communities. One of these such resources is LILA, Lane Independent Living Association, which we have partnered with to help our clients as they are transitioning out of the hospital to find housing and jobs. We provide many unique and innovative programs that help with treatment of patients and work to provide successful transition outside of the state hospital. Our proximity to many of our individuals' families allows for a closer family interaction than if they were moved back to Salem, and this provides for a greater support system, increasing the care they receive. The OSH Junction City campus provides greater continuity of care. I urge you to keep the hospital open as it provides many benefits not only to the community but also to individuals who end up in our care. When we talk about having capacity and numbers of beds, we must also remember that it must be the right type of living environment that is conducive to care. I ask that you first... Okay, I'm done.
We do encourage people to... Thank you for observing the time limit. We do encourage you to submit written testimony.
I will, yes.
Thank you very much.
That was
almost our show.
Senator Steiner Hayward, Representative Rayfield, and committee members, I appreciate the opportunity and the thank you for providing this forum to advocate for keeping Junction City Oregon State Hospital open. My name is George Gilchrist. I'm a registered nurse at the State Hospital in Junction City. In addition to belonging to AFSCME, I am also a taxpayer in Junction City and in Eugene. Junction City Oregon State Hospital provides a safe place for people who are experiencing significant acute or acute on chronic mental health crises from across the state. Unable to provide basic daily care for themselves, our patients are among the most vulnerable and underserved members of our population. From the moment clients come through our doors, our sole focus is to help them stabilize, develop life skills, and identify available resources that they will need to successfully discharge back into their home communities across our state. There is a shortage of nurses and other healthcare professionals in Oregon. Significantly, a functional integrated mental health support network in communities throughout our state is sparse and inefficient at best. Beyond so many reasons to keep Junction City open, I ask that you consider that you consider community support services that they will not provide effective care for patients experiencing acute crises. There is not room in Salem or anywhere else in the state for patients who will require the level of care we provide. If possible, I would encourage you, each of you, to seek out a tour of our facility before you make up your mind about the budget. I can virtually guarantee that you will find constituents from most of your districts. I am not sure where the solution lies for our current budget. I can say with certainty that closure of our hospital would unfairly deprive mentally ill citizens of the care they deserve. I appreciate your efforts as public servants to do the best you can for all Oregonians. Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right, we've got Doug Riggs, Allison Kelly, and Maureen Hinman coming up. And after that, we'll be going to Marilyn Taylor, Dan Smith, and William Wu. So you guys are on deck.
Good morning, Co-Chair Steiner Hayward and Co-Chair Rayfield, members of the committee. Thank you for taking us out of order and the opportunity to testify. For the record, I'm Allison Kelly. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of Liberty House and Chair of the Board of the Oregon Network of Child Abuse Assessment Centers. I did submit written testimony on February 22nd. I can resubmit that, and I really just would like to make one comment. The OHA allocation ultimately will involve payments, most commonly through the CCOs, that cover the cost of child abuse assessment. And my point is that that's a very highly specialized model. It's a little bit more expensive, but it's worth it. There is a separate bill, House Bill 2221, which seeks reimbursement levels to cover the cost of that assessment. And that's really my one point, is that those medical assessments, which include forensic interviews, are worth it. I do suggest that as a state, we need to think differently about child abuse. It's not just another cause. Of all the social tragedies facing youth, such as suicide, running away, drug use, homelessness, youth sexually acting out or raping other youth, and mental illness, there is a high likelihood that abuse or severe neglect has been part of that child's life. Of all the high-cost medical conditions that we see in the adult population, obesity, cancer, diabetes, heart disease, and others, emotional, childhood trauma and adversity is highly likely to be on the list of causative factors. The assessment itself is never, ever just about the injury. Child abuse medical assessment always includes something to do with causation. And my most recent brief example is that for children who were so scared, they will say, "I don't really know how I got shot," but the right environment and the right setting, that child will say, "Yeah, my dad pointed that gun at me and shot me." That's what's happening to Oregon's children. So thank you for the opportunity to testify. Thank you for your work.
Thank you.
Co-Chair Steiner Hayward and Ray Field and members of the committee. My name is Maureen Hinman, and I'm the Policy Director for the Oregon School-Based Health Alliance. So I'm here to talk about school-based health centers, or SBHCs, which currently receive partial funding through the Public Health Division of OHA. SBHCs provide physical, mental, and preventive health services for kids in schools, regardless of their ability to pay for services. They provide critical health services to students who may otherwise have little or no access to care. They contribute to the goals of healthcare reform by helping CCOs meet their metrics, and they're a critical access point for mental health services. They also address health disparities, serving a higher percentage of students of color than are represented in Oregon as a whole. In sum, SBHCs keep kids in schools healthy, ready, and ready to learn. Based on the current draft budget, it's estimated that there would be a 25% reduction in the SBHC budget. This translates to potential closure of 20 SBHCs, nearly 14,000 students who may not be able to receive preventive or mental health services, reduced overall state resources since SBHC's leverage $4 for every dollar that the state contributes, and schools needing to choose between removing critical health supports or using limited education dollars to provide them. Last week, almost 200 young people came to the talk to the Capitol to talk about how important SBHCs are to them. I listened in and heard one student talk about how his parents were immigrants and he had many barriers to receiving care, so the SBHC was literally the only place he had ever received care. I know that you are faced with complex and challenging budget decisions, and still respectfully, I ask you to continue funding school-based health centers. Cutting them now could mean cutting a lifeline for a young person. Thanks.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Doug Riggs. I'm here on behalf of the Human Services Coalition of Oregon, and we certainly appreciate the enormous challenges that you're facing with this budget situation. We understand and support your efforts both to find new revenues and also ways to control spending in areas that do not affect the lives and safety of Oregonians. I know my time is limited, and I want to give you just one example and then three quick points on how you might consider budget prioritization. Last year, as Maureen mentioned, we hosted School-Based Health Center Day in the Capitol, and one young lady, a bright, intelligent young lady's message was particularly poignant. In a meeting with a speaker, she related the fact that when she came into high school, she had been in 32 foster placements in her life by the time she got to be a sophomore in high school. She had had no behavioral and no mental health care and was suicidal. A teacher recognized her crisis, failing in her classes, personally walked her down the hall to the School-Based Health Center, which had just received that very year funding from this subcommittee to provide behavioral and mental health services. Over the next 2 years, she not only was put back on a path to success, but went to community college this year and was hopefully set up for a life of success and as a result of this service. So as you consider these very difficult budget areas, I would urge you to consider prioritizing funding in three areas. Number one, areas that are cost savers downstream. And we know that prevention is often hard to quantify, but saves money in the long term. Second is a program or programs that leverage state and other federal funding or grant programs, and there are many examples. And third are essential to the lives and safety of Oregonians, and you'll hear lots about this today. But we know when we cut the Oregon Health Plan by 80,000 people in the last decade, many people lost those critical services that literally kept them alive. So again, I very much appreciate the difficult task you face. HISCO stands ready to help you in this effort, and we appreciate the time today. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thanks for the work that you do. Okay, we are moving now to Marilyn Taylor, Dan Smith, and William Wu. And then on deck will be Christy Kilcullen and John Kilcullen and Randy Davis. Please.
Hi. My name is William Wu. I'm actually just a private citizen in Eugene. As a short introduction, I'd like to just mention I'm a 20-year resident of Oregon. My opinion regarding the Oregon State Hospital at Junction City stems from the fact that one of my sons is currently a patient there. Nearly 1.5 years ago, my son critically assaulted me due to a psychotic episode from paranoid schizophrenia. Our family had walked with him for the 10 years prior to that as he went through periods of incarceration, homelessness, attempts at getting help, and increasing psychosis and paranoia. After the attack, we have followed his path from initial incarceration at Lane County Jail to Oregon State Hospital in Salem, and then back to Lane County Jail, and finally at Oregon State Hospital in Junction City. He's been there for the last 8 months. Our experiences are not hypothetical or speculative, but are actual and real. We are deeply concerned about Governor Brown's proposal to close Junction City Hospital. Our son is found guilty except for insanity, and was remanded to PSRB. He has been at the hospital for about 8 months and has had progressive and impressive improvement due to the excellent care and the medications that have been provided to him. His hallucinations have stopped. He is no longer feeling paranoia. His mood is appropriately upbeat and animated. He is engaged and hopeful. And it's actually the best he's been in about 10 years. And we have much more hope for him now than we ever had before the assault. Due to the severity of the attack, he has felt to be at risk to me and others. His GEI status limits his options for incarceration for care. He can only be at a secure inpatient facility, such as Oregon State Hospital in Junction City or Salem. If Junction City were shuttered, all GEI patients like my son would have to be housed at OSH in Salem, which is already at full capacity or nearly so. So where would they go if the state hospital were closed? Well, Governor Brown has proposed perhaps sending them to the community and secure residential treatment facilities, but as you know, those are undersupplied and would take a number of years to actually get up and running and at great cost. So for people like my son, who is at GEI and has had a severe psychosis with ramifications of risk to others, he would have no options except to go to Salem, which again is already at near full capacity, if not full. Due to my son's time in Lane County Jail, he was placed in protective solitary confinement and was only allowed for 1 hour outside his cell. And as everybody would imagine, that would not be a healthy situation for anybody with mental illness, and that would be a suboptimal situation. So out of compassion for those with dangerous mental health disorders, I urge you to strongly keep Junction City open, please.
Thank you for sharing that difficult and important story. We really appreciate your coming today.
It is my honor today to address this legislature to Senator Steiner Hayward and Chair Representative Rayfield and members of this committee. Thank you for this opportunity. I am Marilyn Taylor, a mental health RN at Junction City, and I represent ASME Local 75 in Oregon State Hospital. I began working at Oregon State Hospital 16 years ago this month, and I had the privilege of addressing this legislature when I'd been here 2 years and thought I knew everything and found out I did not. We had the privilege at that time of you granting what we needed, and I hope you will again. Okay, our mission at Oregon State Hospital is we are a psychiatric hospital that inspires hope, promotes safety, and supports recovery for all, which makes us a unique hospital in Junction City is that we are small. We are a smaller facility. We know our residents. The residents know each other. That is extremely important. We go down to visiting. We visit our families. We know our families as well as our residents. Our families, our facility introduces ourselves to our programs. Our patients all know the security. They know the kitchen staff. They know all the other unit staff as well. Safety for recovery. Since we are a small facility, we have much less seclusion than our Salem campus. We teach our staff collaborative problem solving, which is people do well if they can. If our residents haven't been taught, how can they do well? Our residents have done something that has brought them to the hospital. We try to help them learn the situation. Recovery. When a person comes into the hospital, we immediately get them involved in their treatment care plan. We take the time to introduce the treatment plan, and then they help prepare it. We help them prepare for risk review, which is, do you know your diagnosis? Do you know what you would like to succeed in? Do you know your medications? It's easy to be a heart patient compared to a mental ill patient. You do not know your own head. How can you know your diagnosis? I love my job. I totally would love to introduce all of you to our residents. I have in my paper, and I will submit it, let you know what some of our residents are like. We ask that you increase the revenue for Oregon State Hospital, include keeping Junction City open. I drive 68 miles. I drive from Almsville down to Junction City every day. I love the smaller atmosphere. We have staff and family members that have moved down there, and it totally affects them.
Yeah, I'm so sorry to interrupt, but I am going to have to ask you
That's
to wrap
fine.
Up. Thank you very
but
much. I apologize for interrupting, but I want to make sure everybody
no
gets a chance to speak.
Thank you
so much for your testimony. Please.
Thank you, Chair Steiner Hayward, Chair Rayfield, and the respected members of the committee. I'm Dr. Daniel Smith. I'm a forensic psychologist at the Oregon State Hospital. I work at both the Junction City and Salem campuses. The Oregon State Hospital is an integral part of the statewide behavioral health system, providing psychiatric care for adults from all 36 counties at Oregon State Hospital, Salem, and Junction City campuses. The hospital's primary goal is to help people recover from mental illness and return to life in the community. The current budget outlook and projected shortfall for the 2017-19 biennium has brought about a recommendation from the governor to close the Junction City campus. Alternatively, the co-chairs of Ways and Means budget released earlier this year proposed closing wards and cottages at both Salem and Junction City campuses. The assumption and expectation is that folks would instead receive treatment in independent community-based settings. The flaw in this thinking is that the funding for these independent community-based settings is significantly inadequate. Closing any part of the statewide behavioral health system without fully funding the community and independent settings is a mistake that will have lasting negative impacts on people with mental illness, their families, and Oregon communities. The Oregon State Hospital provides the highest level of care in a therapeutic environment. It is important to recognize that there will always be a need for this high level of care with a level of security that a community-based setting cannot provide. Junction City is a state-of-the-art facility, brand new less than 3 years ago, costing $130 million. We urge you please to fund the state hospital at a point adequate enough to care for Oregon's most vulnerable and to keep Junction City open so we can use the state-of-the-art facility for the purpose it was intended and to provide high-quality care. Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right, we have coming up Christy Kilcullen, John Kilcullen, and Randy Davis, and then we're going to be switching to public health, and we'll be calling up Eva Ripito, Trisha Mortel, did I get that right? Handwriting, folks. Larry Boxman will be next. Thank you. Oh, Randy Davis had to leave. Okay. Thank you. Mr. Kilcullen.
Good morning. My name is Christy Kilcullen. I'm the widow of Officer Chris Kilcullen. I'm not going to cry. I only have 2 minutes.
Take your time. It's okay. It's okay.
You may or may not know the story. Chris was on duty when he was shot and killed by Cheryl Dawn Kidd, who currently resides in Pendleton Cottages. She was deemed unfit to stand trial. So you've heard all the smart, people are way smarter than me, have given you the numbers, but I wanted you to see the face of the other side, the face of what the community, how we're in jeopardy if we don't have facilities like Junction City open. My daughter now doesn't have a father. I don't have my husband. So we're talking big deal. This is a big deal. And I think that our government owes us a responsibility, has a responsibility to protect us. Chris wasn't protected that day. Cheryl should have been in care a lot sooner. Well, she wasn't really in care. So I urge you, I brought a photo. This is Chris and our daughter. This is what it looks like. This is what destruction looks like if we don't supply mental health services to our community. This is gone. She doesn't remember him. She was 4. So this goes beyond math. This goes beyond anything like that. This is the heart of the issue right here. So I urge you to remember this photo when you vote on this. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good morning. Thank you. My name is John Kilcullen, the father of Officer Chris Kilcullen. I'm also a former Lane County Deputy Sheriff, was a lawyer for 30 years, and a pro tem judge in municipal and circuit court, in those courts. I'm here to advocate for keeping the Junction City Hospital open, coming from a couple of perspectives. First one has to do with the fact that my son was shot and killed. I am convinced that Cheryl Kidd she had problems, mental problems, mental deficiencies, and mental illness, and the proper place for her to be was in some facility. Fortunately, that's where she is now. Unfortunately, back when Chris was killed, Junction City was not available, but I'm convinced that if just Junction City had been open, Cheryl Kidd would have been an appropriate person to be in that facility, and my son would be alive today. The other perspective I'd like to bring, just as an individual, but somebody who saw it as both a deputy sheriff, a lawyer, and a judge, is the people that come through jail. I've arraigned hundreds of individuals, thousands probably, of individuals who have come through the jail. And the number that you see, or I saw, with mental health issues is just overwhelming. There needs to be a place for those individuals. I'm afraid the jail is not the appropriate place for them. It doesn't help them, doesn't benefit them. So the Junction City Hospital would be a place that those that are a danger to self and others could be placed. We have to keep our communities safe, and the way to do that is to have facilities like Junction City there. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for being willing to come and share your story. We're very sorry for your loss and grateful for Officer Kilcullen's service to our state. Thank you very much for coming. Okay, we're moving to Eva Ripito, Tricia, and Larry Boxman. And then the next folks will be Jeff Luck, Alejandro Carral, and Katrina Rothenberger.
Chair Steiner Hayward, Co-Chair Rayfield, members of the committee, thank you so much for the opportunity to provide testimony. Eva Ripito, speaking a little bit on behalf of AFSCME Council 75, a little bit on behalf of the Public Health Advisory, as my role as Public Health Advisory Board member, and a little bit as me. I think what you guys all know is that any piece of OHA budget is a part of a web. While you're looking at it in, you know, specific program areas, they all touch each other. Whether it is community mental health, state hospital, or public health, and beyond the OHA budget, our housing funding and other human services as well. And when we remove one piece of it, it impacts other pieces. I'll let my fab colleagues talk about the public health pieces, and I also wanted to call attention to some testimony I've submitted on behalf of one of our public health nurses from Lane County. The story I want to share with you today, though, is about James. He came into our office the day that the snow was melting, January 18th. It was raining. It was slushy. He was limping. He was lost. He was supposed to be at a mental health appointment at a community-based health center at 8:30 in the morning, and it was between 10:30 and 11 that morning. He asked for directions, and we gave him directions, gave him bus pass, gave him the phone number to call, and he looked at me and he said, "I can't get on another bus. That's how I got lost. Can I call somebody for a ride?" And I said, "Yes." Pulled out my phone, gave it to him, and he called, and they said, "Well, you're going to have to reschedule," and gave him another number. I set him up in our conference room, gave him a phone, gave him food, gave him water and coffee, and said, "Do you need any help?" And he said, "Yes, please." First phone call was an outgoing message saying, "Leave your name and number. We'll call you back within 24 hours. This man had no phone, no resources. 3 hours, 6 phone calls later, he did qualify for a ride through OHP. He did have intersections with other human services, and I tried desperately to figure out who they were. And I ended up having to take him because his cab was taking too long to show up, and he was getting a little bit agitated. He was kind. He was the best house guest. And I just want to really point out that without OHP and the other services that are provided to him, he may end up in the state hospital or in another facility. So thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Steiner Hayward and Rayfield and Committee. My name is Tricia Mortel, and I'm the Public Health Administrator for Washington County. I'm here today to talk about the importance of public health services and public health funding. I heard recently after the budget town hall meeting in Portland a question about why people aren't coming out in force in support of public health. It's because when we do our best work, nothing happens. It's really not very noteworthy for people to hold up signs saying, "Thank you so that I can safely dine out today," or "Thank you for making sure my family didn't contract a communicable disease today." Public health is essential but often invisible. We fly in the radar, under the radar, but we're part of the public safety network, we're part of health promotion, and part of disease prevention. We know that funding for prevention and protection is cost effective. Overall, the return on investment for public health is estimated at $67 to $88 for every dollar spent. And I'm sure you're very aware that public health funding is low, declining, or flat funded. Like any other organization, I often have to figure out what's the most urgent thing to do today. The best example in Washington County is how underfunded we are for tuberculosis control. We receive about $46,000 a year, and it costs us $600,000 a year. We're responsible for ensuring that tuberculosis doesn't pass on to coworkers, classmates, shelter residents, inmates, family, and friends. Tuberculosis control is very complicated, and many patients don't want to remain on medications for such a long time. They feel well. So it's essential that we understand that Oregon is facing many budget challenges this legislative session, but we can't overlook that there are cost savings that can be attained long-term through prevention and investing in the public health system. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Senator Steiner Hayward and Representative Rayfield and committee members. My name is Larry Boxman. I'm a paramedic for over 30 years and also the Vice President of Metro West Ambulance for the past 19 years, and as well as the past chair of the Washington County Public Health Advisory Council. As a holder of the ambulance franchise in Washington County, we have long been an important partner with public health. Our traditional work together has been to protect the residents from death and disability through our EMS response activities. But we have also been engaged in many activities to support life-saving community efforts, such as hands-only CPR, community paramedicine, car seat safety, and most recently, law enforcement access to Narcan, a drug that reverses opiate overdoses. But as a public health advisory chair, I've become much more familiar with the wide variety of activities and services that public health is responsible for and the budget constraints they experience. When faced with responding to new and emerging community threats such as Ebola and Zika, they must often stop to put other work on hold. And when they are working on 15 influenza breakouts and 4 norovirus outbreaks during the winter season, they have no capacity to focus on prevention efforts. Washington County, like other public health agencies, routinely have to determine how to best utilize very limited resources. One of the budget cuts proposed in the House Ways and Means Committee is to state support for public health. It is my understanding that this funding is dedicated to communicable disease efforts. Preventing the spread of communicable disease is foundational public health and one that no other agency is responsible for. Although healthcare is responsible for diagnosing and treating diseases in individuals, public health holds a responsibility for assuring that diseases like mumps, meningitis, tuberculosis, and measles are not spread to coworkers, classmates, parishioners, neighbors, or jail inmates, essentially protecting all of the community where they live, work, learn, play, and worship. As a part of the public safety network, we depend on Washington County Public Health to provide leadership for dealing with new infectious diseases like Zika, and bringing partners together to discuss our options for dealing with the overwhelming levels of influenza that clogged our emergency rooms this winter. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And we're going to have Jeff Luck, Alejandro Corral, and Katrina Rothenberger come up. Next will be Freddie Mejia, Dr. David Bansberg, and Elena Rivera. And folks, we're not going to have time to get through everybody, so I'm going to make the chair's prerogative of saying, I see you in the building almost every day, you're going to the bottom of the list, because I want to give respect to the folks who've made the effort to come for this special testimony. I see you all nodding your head supporting me on that. I appreciate that very much. You know where to find us. So, please.
Good morning, Co-Chair Steiner Hayward and Co-Chair Rayfield. For the record, my name is Alejandro Corral from Portland, Oregon. I'm here as a member of the Public Health Advisory Board. I have been a member of that board since 2010 and served as chair in 2015, the last year of the original FAB, before it was revamped as the new Public Health Advisory Board. In this capacity, I have worked with Public Health Division staff, FAB board members, and the Public Health Modernization Task Force, which was a legislatively created task force to develop a plan for public health modernization. As you know, local health departments across the state already do so much with few resources. And it's important, it's critical that we bring Oregon's public health system into the 21st century as the next critical step that is needed in order to protect Oregonians' health and prevent illness and disease before they occur. Modernization of the public health system is also essential in light of healthcare reform, as coordinated care organizations have focused more on improving population health outcomes. Collaboration and coordination with public health has become an essential strategy to meet these goals. But the public health system lags far behind when it comes to the necessary resources to have the greatest impact on health outcomes, and in particularly reducing health disparities. The work of the Public Health Modernization Task Force and the current version of the FAB has resulted in a plan aimed at establishing a set of foundational capabilities based on the state of the population served at the local level. Along with the foundational capabilities, the plan includes an accountability framework that allows health departments to adjust and tailor their services to local needs. Despite the budgetary constraint we face, investments in public health modernization need to be phased in over the next several biennia. As the FAB has concluded, we continue to believe that, especially in a very constrained fiscal environment, funding to begin public health modernization will yield tangible benefits to Oregonians immediately. These benefits include improving the quality and length of our lives, as well as health cost savings resulting from prevention of chronic diseases and interruption of spread of communicable diseases. Thank you
very much.
Good morning. My name is Jeff Luck. I'm the current chair of the Public Health Advisory Board and have served on the board since 2012. I'm also an associate professor at Oregon State University's College of Public Health and Human Sciences, where part of my research evaluates the activities of public health agencies. In House Bill 3100, the legislature recognized that all Oregonians would benefit from a modernized public health system designed to meet clear health objectives at the state and local level. That bill required an in-depth assessment of public health activities in Oregon. Every local health department and state public health program participated to produce a picture of our public health system more detailed than any other state has. The results of that assessment were striking. No local health department is currently able to provide all of the foundational programs and capabilities that Alejandro just outlined. Shortcomings exist at the state level also, and there's wide variation across local health departments in how well they're able to address specific public health needs. The assessment estimates that an additional $105 million per year, approximately 50% above current funding, is needed to close the gap between current implementation and full provision of foundational public health services to all Oregonians. As Alejandro mentioned, it'll take several biennia to close that gap, but the proposed additional step of $30 million is small. It's $3.75 per person per year in the upcoming biennium. Our board recommended focusing those early investments on communicable disease and environmental health, where emerging threats are all too clear, and a few key capabilities like emergency preparedness and improved data collection. Representative Greenlick and Senator Moniz Anderson met with our board to reiterate their desire for a 10-year roadmap to build from these early steps toward a fully modernized public health system. That public health modernization plan has been submitted as required by House Bill 3100. And so today, Alejandro and I and our colleagues urge you to begin that modernization by funding it in the 2017-19 biennium budget. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good morning, Co-Chair Senator Steiner Hayward and Representative Rayfield. My name is Katrina Rothenberger, and I'm the Public Health Administrator in Polk County. I'm here to talk to you about the needed investments in Oregon's public health system. Local health departments focus on preparing for, preventing, and responding to illnesses and injuries caused by a variety of factors, including infectious diseases, unhealthy behaviors like smoking and substance abuse, and natural disasters. I would first like to share with you an example of an infectious disease control funded with state support for public health. In December 2015, a child in Polk County was diagnosed with bacterial meningitis. This child attended daycare and an event for kids and families with approximately 450 people. Children in the same class were instructed to seek prophylaxis at their primary care provider's office, and those who attended the event were sent letters to watch for symptoms. Four nurses, one supervisor, one administrator, and two office specialists all participated in this response. Letters were translated from English to Spanish in a matter of hours, and countless phone calls to providers and state officials were made. Response to this one instance required nearly 150 staff hours. We worked tirelessly as a department, and I'm happy to report that there were no subsequent cases, and the child with meningitis recovered nicely. This is public health in action. But it also means making these tough decisions. Because this event took the time of nearly all of our staff, it meant that we had to cancel immunization and reproductive health appointments. Diseases like meningitis and the resurgence of measles and mumps demonstrate the ongoing need for a strong public health system. Between 2008 and 2013, the number of disease reports in Oregon increased by 30%, while funding to investigate and respond to those reports has decreased over 10%. While outbreaks are relatively rare, the ongoing work to track infectious diseases are regular and ongoing. The long-term health consequences from budget reductions will far outweigh the short-term savings. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So we've got Freddie Mejia, David Banford, and Elena Rivera coming up. After them, we're going to have Jocelyn Warren, Trisha Tillman, and Don Emmerich. Did I get it right? I hope. Ms. Nisha Kwong, I'm going to ask you to hold for now because we get to see you a lot. So we'll try to get to you later.
Co-Chair Steiner Hayward and Rayfield and members of the committee. My name is Elena Rivera, and I'm the Health Policy and Program Advisor for Children's Institute. Thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony today in support of protecting our state investment in public health nurse home visiting. We all know that children experience their most profound cognitive, physical, social, and emotional growth in the first few years of life, and that the quality of their early experiences sets the foundation for future learning and lifelong health. Public health nurse home visiting is a critical health promotion intervention that serves families facing risk for poor outcomes to offer parents resources, information, and tools that strengthen parent-child relationships, ensure children are getting the health care they need, and promote early learning. Home visiting intervenes early to prevent and reduce adverse childhood experiences that have lifelong impacts on health outcomes, thereby saving the state millions in costly interventions later down the road. The Oregon Health Authority's Public Health Division serves over 15,000 vulnerable children and families and children and youth with special health needs through four voluntary nurse home visiting programs. There's been incredible progress and work still underway to ensure home visiting services provided by the Oregon Health Authority are coordinated and aligned with home visiting provided through the Early Learning Division, which demonstrates a clear commitment by the state to ensure our evolving, comprehensive early childhood system really works for children and families. Our state currently invests $1.5 million in the Baby's First Nurse Home Visiting Program, which allows Oregon to draw down $12 million of Medicaid funding. The outcomes of public health nurse home visiting speak for themselves. Babies First increases the rate of child immunizations, well child visits, and dental care, which are each stated priorities of Oregon's public health and health system and healthcare systems. Despite these positive outcomes and the leveraging of federal dollars, the Ways and Means Co-Chair's budget proposes a cut to this program. Cutting state funding to Babies First would mean 10,000 children and families would no longer benefit from these critical and cost-effective services, and our state progress toward improving maternal and child health would be significantly stalled. So I urge the committee to protect our state investment in nurse home visiting. Thank you.
Thank you. And please, go ahead.
Good morning, Senator Hayward, Representative Rayfield, co-chairs, and members of the committee. My name is David Bangsberg. I'm the dean of the newly created OHSU-PSU School of Public Health. I'm an Oregon native and recently returned to Oregon to lead the School of Public Health, which brings together the best of OHSU biomedicine and PSU community engagement. Our goal is to train the Oregon health workforce, train, develop new knowledge, and contribute to policy to improve the health of Oregonians. I'm also pleased in here to support our practitioners, our local health departments, and our community-based organizations that are providing frontline prevention and care. This morning, I want to share a story that captures a theme: you don't know what you got until it's gone. When I was a medical student at Johns Hopkins Medical School with Representative Bueller, we heard more about tuberculosis in the history of medicine course than all of our clinical courses because it was a disease of the past. One of our professors says, well, they're seeing a few cases in New York City. I then went up to New York City, and we experienced a new epidemic of multidrug-resistant tuberculosis. Thousands of people died, and it cost New York City $1 billion with untold human misery and preventable deaths. I use this as an example of the results that our investments in public health make, and those results lead to the absence of disease. Our successes, we only see the successes, we never see the failures when we are invest in public health, and the failures cost a lot more than the successes. But like the tuberculosis outbreak in New York City, we have amazing crises luring here at home. We have a 8th highest rate of syphilis in the U.S. We have emerging threat of communicable diseases, including cancer, diabetes, and we're concerned about access to clean air and water. 1/3 of Oregon women suffer from depression, and there are 138,000 children without access to early childhood immunization and early education. This creates outbreaks of pertussis and mumps, And we are concerned about these areas and need to prevent these. Thank you very much for allowing me to present to you today. I look for the opportunity to contribute to the public health and well-being of Oregonians.
Thank you. And you're welcome to come over here and take a picture of your colleague, please. We are very excited when we have students here with us.
Co-chairs Rayfield and Steiner, Hayward, members of the committee, good morning. My name is Freddie Mejia, and I am a senior at Roosevelt High School. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today to support of HB 5026. My first experience today, I want to tell you why I think the school-based health centers are important and how school health-based centers have made a positive difference in my life. My first experience with a school health-based center began with a simple sports physical. I was struck by how warm and welcoming the staff were. During that physical, I also found out that I could access so many other services that I hadn't been aware of those services, including checkups, vaccinations, treatment of illnesses or injuries, reproductive health care, general wellness resources, and mental health care. Since my first visit, I've continued to use my school-based health center. The center is an important resource to me because it allows me to receive important health care without spending a lot of time away from school. Having health centers in our school makes going to the doctor as simple as walking down the hall. School-based health centers also serve all students, no matter their insurance status. That means every young person in our state can be better access health services, ranging from physical to mental health counseling. As a student who receives services, I am thankful that a school-based health center is available to me. Without school health-based centers, thousands of students in Oregon wouldn't have access to affordable mental and primary care, including myself. That's why we need to continue funding school-based centers so we can help all young people in our state lead happy, healthy lives. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate you taking the time to come here today. Okay, coming up, we've got Jocelyn Warren, Tricia Tillman, and Don Emmerich, I hope. And then after that, we'll be hearing from Terry Mills, Hannah Roseman, and let's see here, Marcia Kelly.
Good morning. Co-Chair Steiner Hayward and Rayfield and members of the Joint Committee on Human Services. For the record, my name is Dawn Emmerich. I am the Director of Public Health Division for Clackamas County's Department of Health, Housing, and Human Services. Thank you for the opportunity for us to be here in front of you representing Clackamas County on House Bill 5026. I would also like to say ahead of time that for everyone in this room who has eaten within the last week and you have not gotten sick, you are welcome. 1.9 million of our total 9.4 million budget in Clackamas County Public Health is supported through county general funds. Because of this, Clackamas greatly relies on the funding we receive from OHA to conduct the majority of our services. House Bill 5026 includes almost $900 million loss to the Oregon Health Authority's budget. This loss, accompanied by the possible loss of $1.2 billion in federal funds, will have grave consequences in Clackamas County and other local county health departments. I wake up every single day hoping and crossing my fingers that I don't get a report that there is an impending breakout. That is how severe and how much of a dangerous funding situation that we're in. Clackamas County Public Health inspects the most small drinking water systems in the state and was recently recognized by OHA for exemplary work despite not having the FTEs specified by OHA. I would say that we must really prevent being forced to manage by luck and hope. And that is what we do sometimes. We urge your support and amendments to reflect a budget that funds these essential public health services. Thank you so much for the opportunity, and I hope that you do the right thing.
Thank you. Please.
Good morning, Co-Chairs Steiner Hayward and Rayfield, members of the committee. My name is Tricia Tillman, and I'm the Director of Public Health for Multnomah County. And I appreciate the opportunity to testify today in support of public health funding and appreciate your championship of public health in Oregon. Also appreciate your service during this challenging budget time. So Multnomah County is the state's largest public health department and safety net health care provider. Our county's health department works to achieve wellness by preventing the spread of disease, protecting people from environmental health threats, which you've heard a lot about lately, promoting healthy behaviors and health equity, breaking down barriers to health. We work to achieve optimal health for all who live, work, and play in Multnomah County. And the thought that keeps coming to me in this conversation this morning is the familiar saying, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. I just can't get that out of my head. A stable funding for public health and prevention services serves all of our communities. Investing in public health keeps more people healthy for less cost. According to the Trust for America's Health, every dollar invested in prevention saves $5.60 in health spending. And in an era of constrained resources, that is substantial and a necessary return on investment, both financially and in terms of avoiding unnecessary illness and suffering. One example of your public health investments is school-based health centers. We just celebrated the 30th anniversary of Roosevelt High School School-Based Health Center. So we're really happy that Freddie was able to be here today to testify. In fiscal year 15, Multnomah County School-Based Health Center provided services to more than 6,500 students, and over half of the students identified as people of color, and more than 60% were 16 years old or younger. So I want to thank you for your commitment to public health and for your commitment to protecting your investments in public health, preventing costly disease, and preserving the basic fabric of public health that promotes everybody's health in Oregon.
Thank you.
Thank you, Co-Chair Steiner Hayward and Rayfield and members of the committee for hearing our testimony today. My name is Jocelyn Warren. I'm the public health manager for Lane County. I'm here today because I would like to share with you some of our experiences as a local health department and implications for us of reductions to the OHA budget presently under consideration. Because funding for local public health is categorical, we have funding for some things and not for others. And as a consequence, we are a mix ourselves of proactive and reactive in the same health department. One proactive program that you've heard a little bit about today that epitomizes what we've learned in the last 30 years about the power of prevention is the Nurse Family Partnership Home Visiting Program. It serves low-income women with first pregnancies through early intervention, behavioral support, attention to data and outcomes, and engagement with community to improve both short- and long-term outcomes for women and children. Lane County has a large NFP program with 8 nurses and a nurse supervisor. In the same health department, we have a very lean communicable diseases section with 4 nurses and a nurse supervisor serving all 350,000-plus residents in a dozen incorporated cities and dozens more unincorporated communities. And as you have heard, the work is increasing. Last year, we investigated 34 outbreaks, most in senior care facilities and schools. This year, in only the first 2 months, we've already had 29 outbreaks. Since 2010, we've had an increase in syphilis of about 1,000%, from 5 cases to 57 cases last year. And now we have our first cases of mumps in several years. While the numbers are small, the risk is not. Our low vaccination rate increases the risk for a large outbreak. What can we do to increase vaccination rates and prevent an outbreak? There are effective strategies, such as partnering with clinical provider groups to institute reminder and recall systems and provide client incentives, expanding access to vaccinations in other settings, such as WIC and community housing. But we are not doing these, and it pains me to say this, but we can't. And if cuts are made to the OHA Public Health Division budget, even our ability to be reactive will be compromised. So thank you for hearing our testimony today. Now is the time to strengthen the infrastructure and capacity of public health so we can focus on prevention and support the optimal health and wellness of all Oregonians. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, coming up, we've got Terry Mills, Hannah Rosman, and Marcia Kelly. And then we'll be moving on to We've got four of you signed up for Planned Parenthood. I'm going to call you up together. You guys need to figure out how to get yourselves into 6 minutes. Ann Creer, Jocelyn Wagman, and Hannah Argento, and Jonas Bowman. And I apologize in advance for squishing you guys, but please.
Okay. Co-chairs Steiner Hayward, Rayfield, and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak with you, and thank you for the compassion and leadership that you've shown today. My name's Terry Mills. I'm a longtime nurse educator at Portland Community College, and I also serve on the Oregon Nurses Association Cabinet for Health Policy. The budget deficit that we're facing is alarming. Our state is experiencing a serious funding shortfall, largely as a result of an insufficient tax structure. You, our elected officials, are faced with an important choice: kick hundreds of thousands of Oregonians off of their health insurance and endanger numerous vital nurse-led public health programs, or ask corporations and hospitals to start paying their fair share. Oregon school-based health centers are just one example of nurse-led public health programs at risk for losing state dollars, and that could result in their closure or need to cut back vital services. And we heard excellent testimony from a student who uses these services today. These clinics provide quality, affordable, cost-effective health care to young people, and they help keep our kids healthy in school and ready to learn. Not only do nurses provide emergent care, but they also provide health teaching. In a 2012-2013 survey, 77% of those served reported discussing at least one preventive health topic during their health center visit. Number one on this list was healthy body weight and eating. Oregon now has the 22nd highest adult obesity rate in the nation, according to a report released last September. By focusing on prevention and early intervention, costly health conditions such as diabetes are avoided, and this will save healthcare dollars in the future. Currently, our state hospitals have $50 billion in reserve, and 70% of those profits are the direct result of Medicare reimbursements. We have a critical obligation to those we serve. Today, I'm asking you to make a choice that will continue to provide funding for services that Oregonians depend upon. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Co-Chair Senator Steiner Hayward, Co-Chair Representative Rayfield, and committee members. My name is Hannah Rosenow. I'm the Program Director for NARAL Pro-Choice Oregon, proud to be here in red to give testimony in support of public health funding. NARAL Pro-Choice Oregon and the Oregon Foundation for Reproductive Health work statewide in communities and healthcare systems to ensure timely, affordable access to all forms of reproductive healthcare. We are working this session to ensure that all Oregonians, regardless of income, citizenship status, gender identity, or type of insurance, can access the full range of reproductive health services. The Oregon Health Authority and a strong public health is critical to this end and needs to have the funds for these vital programs to operate. We support programs that work within maternal and early childhood, such as the Babies First and the public health home visiting nurses that we heard testimony for already. We believe that Oregons deserve to be able to access, students deserve to be able to access healthcare services within their school-based health centers, and that Oregon school nurses are critical to this end as well. And of course, the Oregon Contraceptive Care C-Care program supports public health clinics, FQHCs, and family planning programs for a variety of services that we need, including access to birth control methods and counseling, pelvic exams, pap smears, pregnancy tests, and referrals for other health services. One statistic that really stands out to me that the Guttmacher Institute notes is the absence of publicly supported family planning services provided at safety net health centers in Oregon. Without these, the rates of unintended pregnancy, unplanned birth, and abortion for all women would be 83% higher in Oregon. So we know that these funding this program is critical, and thank you for listening to my testimony today.
Thank you.
Chair Steiner Hayward and Chair Rayfield and members of the committee, my name is Marcia Kelly, and I'm the public policy advocate for the Oregon Women's Rights Coalition, and I also wear a hat as the HISCO, Human Services Coalition of Oregon, co-chair of the Tax and Revenue Committee. When you look at the public health website on you find out that they work for protection, prevention, promotion, and practice, and that has a wide variety of effects on women. Immunizations keeping women and children safe, you've heard a lot about that. One of the things that you haven't heard about is the women, infant, and children food programs that are run through the public health system, including the farmer program where they give fruit and vegetables, fresh, locally grown fruit and vegetables at farmers markets from June 1st to October 31st. There's also a program for maternal mental health, and you've heard also about the well baby visits, and so I won't go into that anymore. One of the things that you can do is work with your colleagues, including Representative Bueller, who is on the Revenue Committee, in looking for revenues to help our...
Thank you, Michelle. It always
helps to spend a lot of time in revenue when you come and testify in ways and means, to look for a stronger, more stable funding situation.
Thank you. Appreciate it very much. Okay, coming up, we have the Planned Parenthood folks, Ann Creer, Jocelyn Wagman, Hannah Argento, and Jonas Bowman. And I appreciate in advance, you guys can swap out. There's a fourth chair right there. I appreciate in advance you kind of keep it tight. And then after them, we'll be hearing from, well, actually, we're moving right along here. If we have time at that point, we'll hear from, I don't know who, we'll figure it out.
Go down.
Hang tight. You guys start.
Thank you, Senator Steiner Hayward, Representative Rayfield, committee members. My name is Janet Bama-Gerhart. I am a Planned Parenthood volunteer. I'm also a science education researcher and associate dean of research in the College of Education at Oregon State University. I'm here today because I stand with Planned Parenthood and the over 60,000 patients Planned Parenthood serves in Oregon each year. I'm here to advocate specifically for the contraceptive care program, which covers the cost of critical health services, including contraception, family planning, birth control, tests for sexually transmitted diseases, and by proxy, cancer for tens of thousands of Oregonians every year. As a just-out-of-college student with barely enough to pay rent, I benefited from state services just like these. Without the early diagnosis of a pre-cervical cancer that this service provided, I very likely would not be here today. As a lifelong educator, I worry about the lack of such screening and care for younger and older patients whose earlier diagnosis via such services will not just save lives, but ultimately family financial futures as well as state dollars. As a parent, as I watch access to quality health care dwindle across economic brackets and employers, I hope my daughter has access to such services should she ever need them. And as a scientist, I hope that these instrumental services and the related information distributed to their patients continue to be based on evidence, as is the case with the contraceptive care program. With congressional Republicans and Trump corroding and corrupting our health care systems and spreading misinformation about science and health, I implore you to protect the health care of our very deserving citizens of this great state. Thank you for your service, time, and opportunity to share my thoughts.
Thank you. And before you start, one of you is not signed up on this list, because I called four of you and there's five of you at the table. So if you did not personally sign up on this list, we need to get you on the list at some point. So keep going, but whoever didn't sign up, please touch base with Mr. Sorensen over here at some point.
Okay. Good morning, Senator Steiner, Hayward, Representative Rayfield, and members of the committee. My name is Ann Creer. I am also a Planned Parenthood volunteer. I want to talk about the contraceptive care program. The contraceptive care program benefits low-income women and men in every county of the state, not just Planned Parenthood patients. As a health educator who works with youth around teen pregnancy prevention, I can say that one of the most common questions that I get from youth when talking about birth control is, how much does it cost, right? Cost can have a huge factor as to whether or not youth can access family planning services. There's a very real economic argument to be made for helping youth access birth control through programs like C-Care. Not only are we empowering youth to take control of their sexual health, we are also helping youth to prevent difficult struggles of having an unplanned pregnancy in their teen years. As you know, the economics of teen parenting rarely work out for the advantage of the teen, their children, or the society at large. So C-Care is a great investment because it prevents larger costs later on. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Hi, Senator Steiner Hayward, Representative Rayfield, and members of the committee. My name is Jocelyn Wagman. I'm also a Planned Parenthood volunteer, and I'm also here to advocate for the contraceptive care program. I won't repeat what's already been said factually about the program, but I would just like to say that tell you something about my own personal experience, which is that, as it turns out, I didn't even know about this program until very recently, and I'm in the healthcare and social work fields. That's because I was in graduate school and I was new to Oregon, and I actually would have qualified for C-Care had I known about it. And so my first year of graduate school, I had to have very expensive, unaffordable health insurance through my university, and didn't know I could have qualified for some of these services that I would have availed myself of. I'm very grateful that in my second year of graduate school, I realized that I qualified for the Oregon Health Plan and was able to gain that coverage and free contraceptive access and other health services that I needed through OHP. And I just want to say that I think my experience suggests that that the need for this type of program is actually probably greater than its current use. There are people out there who need these services who don't know about them. So I think we need to do more to make sure people know that these services are out there and help them get them. And as a woman who has recently, very recently, and over the past 7 years since leaving college, experienced frequent uncertainty regarding health insurance coverage, not knowing where or if I'm going to be able to get the contraception I need is extremely stressful. Despite OHP and new laws that allow for people to obtain a year's supply of birth control, the reality on the ground is that it can still be difficult to ensure consistent access to contraception. And especially in today's political climate, it's more important than ever to ensure this type of access for all Oregonians.
Thank you. Why don't you switch seats so we got the microphone for this next test witness. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Hannah Argento, and I'm a Planned Parenthood volunteer and a student at the University of Oregon. I'm here today because I stand with Planned Parenthood, and I have been a recipient of the Oregon Contraceptive Care Plan for the past 4 or 5 years. Through the Oregon Contraceptive Care Plan, I've been able to be empowered to make decisions regarding my own reproductive health, and I think that in this current climate, it's more important than ever that Oregon continue to allow women, young women, to be able to make those decisions regarding their own personal health that are rapidly being restricted, coming down from the federal government all the way to local governments. And I think that it's been proven that reproductive funding reproductive health services ends up saving a lot of money in the future. It's been estimated that in a single biennium indicate that net savings can be in the $50 million range if we continue to fund these reproductive health services. And given the huge deficit in the Oregon budget, I think that funding the Oregon Contraceptive Care Program should be a priority.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And thank you all for being so parsimonious in your testimony. Appreciate it.
Hello, everyone. My name is Jonas Bowman. I'm also a student at the University of Oregon and a patient of Planned Parenthood. So I just want to share a personal experience of mine. So last summer, I was facing some confusing personal circumstances. I had no one I thought I could turn to. As an 18-year-old, you don't always want to talk to your parents. Adults aren't always approachable. Planned Parenthood is someone you can call, get information from, and they really help you out, and they really give you incredible service. And without them, I would not be the place like where I am today. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And as a parent of an 18-year-old, I can attest to that. All right, folks, that brings us to the end of our scheduled time. For those of you who did not have an opportunity to testify, we apologize. There is a limited amount of time. Please do feel free to submit. You can send written testimony to jwmhs.exhibits, as in Joint Ways and Means Human Services.exhibits, at OregonLegislature.gov, or hand it in to Mr. Sorensen. And we look forward to hearing from all of you. And that, colleagues, will be adjourned tomorrow. We start the Department of Human Services.